This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at REACH 2015, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders on March 19 and 20, 2015.
As with all ministry, it is a privilege to serve God in prison ministry. My family and I went to Guatemala in 1992, and through everything that we were doing to sell out or to get rid of all our stuff and move down to a place we've never been, we thought we were sacrificing a lot. We were only there a week or so, and we had a missionary meeting, and I'll never forget the prayer that Levi Martin prayed. He said, "Lord, help us to remember that it's a privilege to serve you in Guatemala." And that changed my outlook on ministry. And just Tuesday evening, before I came here Wednesday, I was in prison, and my wife was saying, "I don't think you should go tonight. I think you should stay home." And I was pretty tired. Well, I was supposed to be there that night. It was a tremendous blessing. How many are involved in some sort of prison ministry? Okay, good. I invite your questions, your comments as we go along. My involvement in prison ministry came, my family and I came home from Guatemala in 98, and before we come home, our bishop at that time, Roy Yoder, through a contact with CLP, was visiting a man in a state prison in Huntington, or Smithfield. And he was talking to the chaplain, and the chaplain said, "We could use help with the Spanish ministry." In Pennsylvania, I don't know what other states, I can only speak from the state of Pennsylvania, but in Pennsylvania, 8 to 10% of the inmates are Hispanic. And a number of them don't speak any English. And so when I got back, I put it off for about 6 months because I was afraid of it. I was afraid to go behind bars. I was afraid that they'd ask me questions I wouldn't know the answers to. I just didn't know. Well, I eventually got in. It took me about 6 months till I could get in. And that was in the fall of 99. And it was Yoke Fellowship Prison Ministry, small group discussion. And I usually take care of the Spanish circle, and then we have three or four English circles. And it's been a real blessing. I gave you a couple of handouts. The one that the handout for this session, "I Was in Prison and You Came Unto Me." Hebrews 13:3. Paul writing there says, "Remember them that are in bonds as bound with them, and them which suffer adversity as being yourselves also in the body." So we remember those behind bars. We remember those in prison. How do you do that? Well, yeah, they're there. Is that remembering them? We pray for those in prison. Is that remembering them? I think that it involves that, but it also involves meeting them, sharing with them. Many are forsaken or rejected. Often when we have, once a year, each state prison has their volunteer banquet, and there are different times men have come and spoke at that and said, "This is you are the only visitors I get." And some of those, one man has been there for 40 years. Another man I met Tuesday night, 25 years. And some of those get no visitors. We need to do that. It's an opportunity to visit those in prison. And then in Matthew 25, the last speaker actually read this passage. I'd just like to notice a couple of things here. Matthew 25. The king shall, verse 34, "Then the king shall say unto them on his right hand, Come, ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world." Then he gives a number of needs that need to be met by the church. I was hungry and you gave me meat. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you took me in. I would say those we often do pretty well. Naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came unto me. Jesus is saying there that these people on the right did that. And they said, when did we do that? And verse 40 says, verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye have done it unto one of the least of these brethren, these my brethren, ye have done it unto me. I believe it's a command to go into prison. And we realize that we do it for Christ. And he says, I was there and you came to me. Let's drop down to prison ministry is a command. It's also a privilege. It's a privilege to go in and share something that you know can help them. Some of the testimonies we got back from our visitation and our Bible studies there is that that has done more for them than anger management classes. And I've seen it work. I've seen a man who was a very angry man. And we Bible studied and we talked to him, and one day he said to me, how many of you actually were in a cell or looked in a cell? It's like living in someone else's bathroom when there's two people there in a cell. It's not a very nice way to live. I know they have TV and they have everything you think, but it's not a very nice place to be. And a lot of the frustration they have is their cellmates. It's not good. But anyways, they have 5 minutes for a shower. And this angry man, what's his name now? I can't remember his name because he moved to another prison. But he was trying, with God's help, to change his attitude. And he came to me one day, and he was really frustrated. He says, the guy ahead of me took 2 minutes of my time in the shower. So I only had 3 minutes till I had to be out of there. And he said, what should I have done? And I said, well, I think you should have just taken your 3 minutes and got out in time. I knew you would say that. And he now is at another prison, and one of the men from our congregation is his spiritual advisor, can go in visit him. And we're not allowed to have contact because he's at a different prison than what I go to. But he sends messages to me. There's still a tie there. I believe it is a responsibility of the church, the body of Christ, to remember those behind bars. And the only way a person's changed is from the inside out. And the state does many things to try to rehabilitate people, but it is only through the power of Christ that that can happen. Many people have made wrong choices in life. They are caught in a cycle of sin and violence. The basic difference between us and them is they were caught and we were not. If you would have gotten fined or caught for every time you broke the law, what would your record look like? Some of it was not intentionally. You know, you did things you didn't intentionally break the law. And I know some of them have really messed up. But they were caught and we were not. They're also, we didn't choose to be born where we were, and them chosen where or to be born where they were. I'm going to be sharing some stories, some men that I've met that I've seen changes in their lives. One of them is Benito. Benito is a Spanish man from Puerto Rico that's there, and one of the privileges about ministering to Hispanics behind bars is they come from all over. South America, Central America, Caribbean. But anyway, he was from there. He was raised in a witch's home. His mother was a witch. Never went to church, not nothing. evil influence in his life. He, a number of years ago, in a fit of rage, he killed a man. And his four-year-old son was watching him do it. He got put into prison. His son got, I think he got moved somewhere else. They didn't see each other again until his son was 16. But during that time, actually around New Year's Day of the year 2000, on the cell floor, he accepted Christ as a Savior. And he's been coming to our Bible study ever since. I was there for his baptism. He was baptized into the church there. He's just an outstanding man. He takes the Bible seriously. He studied for hours. And he's one of the ones I lean on sometimes to help me during Bible study. But he visited his son come to visit him at 16, and he said he walked into the visiting room to visit him, and the first thing his son said was, "Why?" He said, "I had no answer." Whenever his son was 18, he had the opportunity to lead him to the Lord in the visitor's room. He has since led his mother to the Lord in the visitor's room. And one of the things that excites me is when these fellows get serious with the Lord, God often starts to restore family relationships. Now, some of those relationships are messed up. The one guy come to me Sunday evening. I was in that for us. I go in every Tuesday evening for Bible study, and the third Sunday evening of the month for a Spanish service. I preach at a Spanish service. He came to him and he said his children's mother. So you know what that means. There's no connection except the children's mother had a tumor that exploded in her head. And he was concerned about that and concerned about his children. And Tuesday night he said that she became Christian and has been healed. They thought that would really mess up her mind, but it didn't. But that's the way. Another one, some of them have children to many different women. And how do you seek restoration and restitution and forgiveness for all of that? It's a real challenge. The DOC tries, but we have the answer. I think we need to go. John 10:10 is so real to me. The thief cometh not but for to steal, to kill, and to destroy. I am come that they might have life and that they might have it more abundantly. The thief wants to destroy. And a lot of these men will tell me that they had everything outside. Cars, women, money, through drugs. But they were in prison and they didn't know it. They got put behind bars. Now they're freer than they were before they went in. One of the things that we also have to reckon with is that they're a captive audience, and it's a challenge then to take it outside, and I'll get into that more later. The need is great. In the Pennsylvania DOC, there are 40,000 inmates, costing more than $40,000 per inmate. I think it's more like $45,000 than $45,000. And then you have all the county jails and the federal prisons. There's about 65,000 inmates in Pennsylvania. That's one state. There are many throughout the United States. There are a number of ways we can minister to those in prison. I'm going to try to explain each of these, and then I would like to look at serving as a volunteer mostly. Pray. Get prayer requests. I find it extremely helpful and exciting to get the congregation involved when I bring prayer requests back to the congregation. I remember back a number of years ago, I was going in. At that point, I was going in every 2 weeks. And a man by the name of Santos was coming out there, and he said, "I want you to pray." He said, "My family does not have contact with me, and I would like to have contact with them." I said, "I'll take it back to our church." We had prayer meeting. We had Bible study Tuesday evening, Wednesday evening's prayer meeting at our church. I'll take that request back. 2 weeks later, I went in, and he said, I got a letter from him. He was all excited. He said, pray that they come. Visit me. In the letter, I said that they were going to. And so I took it back, and we prayed, and he walked in the door 2 weeks later, and he goes, I am so happy. They came to see him for the first time for years. And that brought our church in. The church, most of them are not going in, but it brought our congregation in to prison ministry, and I think that's important. Visit. This is where you go in and visit. You're on a visitor's list, and you can go in and visit one-on-one. At counties, is a little different. It's a little easier to visit, but in the state, they have to put you on their list in order for you to get in to visit. And in order for them to get into the visitor's room to visit, in the state prison in Pennsylvania it's a pretty major thing. They actually have to go into a little room and completely undress, and they have a guard check them. They put other clothes on and go into the visitor's room. Then when they're done with the visitor's room, they do the same thing over. So there's no contraband gets passed. But you can go and visit. You can't take anything along in. There are Gideon Bibles in there if you want to share. It'd be nice to take your own Bible in. But we've had some from our congregation have done that. They become, they visited them. Also, spiritual advisor. You're designated as a spiritual advisor. You can go in every week if you want to. And they can write back and forth. You're their spiritual advisor. You can also write to prisoners. Some have found that to be tremendous. You do have to realize, maybe I'm cynical because I've been going a while, but you have to realize who you're writing to. Some of them have quite the mentality that they're getting all they can get. And if they can get you to get money in their account, why, they feel like they're accomplishing something. Some of them are serious. Next one is serving as a volunteer. You go through all the background checks, and then every so often you can go in and be a volunteer in prison. If you're a volunteer in prison, you cannot have any outside contact. You can't write to them. You can't visit one-on-one. You can't go into the chapel and say, I want to see so-and-so. You're just a volunteer to go in, and then they come to you. There's books, those Yoke Fellowship books that I handed out. There's some volunteers have gotten dismissed for breaking that rule. Pennsylvania State is changing that somewhat. You can write to the superintendent of the institution, and you can get permission to have contact when they come out. But only after you have written permission are you allowed to do that. If they find out that you have had contact with one, after they're out, well, you can get dismissed. Aftercare is when they come out of prison and you help them get established, you walk with them, mentor them. And then family care is another one. I have seen very little of this, but I think it's a great need. And I want to share what that is. Many of the prisons are in central or western part of Pennsylvania. Many people come from Philadelphia, Lancaster, Reading, Allentown, Harrisburg. They move them to other parts of the state, and that's where they're in. Their family to visit them has to drive sometimes hours. Well, I was there at Smithfield one day for a Spanish service, and I noticed that the guards, a lady guard, had a little girl in the foyer there talking to her. And I didn't know what the deal was. I went in, had a service, and came out, and everybody was gone. What had happened was a lady came to visit her husband in prison, brought her little girl along. She got there, the little girl was not on the visitors list. The little girl can't go in. She's driven 4 hours to visit her husband. She can't get in. So she leaves. And sometime later, she comes back by herself. She goes in and visits. Well, as the guards were going through the parking lot, they heard somebody crying. Here she put her baby to sleep, put her in a trunk, and went in to visit. Because she didn't have anybody to watch this while she went in. Well, she got put in jail, and the girl got put in foster care. And it seemed like somebody among our people should help that situation. It's not easy, but I see a great need there. I'd like to look at serving as a volunteer. A couple of things we can do as a volunteer. We can serve as worship services, go in and conduct a worship service, singing groups. I remember the first time that a Mennonite singing group went into the prison where I go in. And usually they have a list of the instruments that they want to take along in, because everything has to be cleared to get in. And they said, "What's your list of instruments?" They said, "A pitch pipe." Well, they couldn't understand this. Well, they went in and blew the pitch and started singing four-part harmony, and the men were just, wow. They looked around. There has to be instruments somewhere. Nobody can sing like this. And it was just our chorus singing. That is a real blessing. It is difficult to get in, though, because you have to get clean checks from everyone, and that takes a while. But it's possible. You can get in for Bible study in small groups, evangelistic crusades, something like Light of Hope or Gospel Express have crusades, and then you go in for follow-up. Getting started. You have a burden, you want to go into prison. How does it happen? It's not always easy. They have so many slots for services and so many slots for Bible study and so forth. And you have to get one of those slots if you want to get in. First thing is you need to pray for open doors. Pray for direction for open doors. Pray for a burden for it. And then my suggestion is to visit the chaplain or the volunteer coordinator. You can call the prisoner, go and visit, talk with them. Tell them what you want. You need to secure a time slot and then go through the application process. That application process, I have patient persistence. There's a man by the name of David Bowen who was a chaplain for a number of years in the DOC, and he's now retired, and he says patient persistence, because we just got a volunteer authorized that had been trying for about a year. Sometimes it goes through quickly, but sometimes it just doesn't go through. For the Pennsylvania DOC to become a volunteer, first of all, you have to fill out a clean check. And this is something you have to fill out every year. Doesn't matter how many years you've been a volunteer, you have to fill out one of those. Then they have a big, thick thing you're supposed to read. And then you have another application to fill out. This is because you're a volunteer. There's a lot of things to fill out. And then emergency information. On top of that, you need a letter endorsing you from an organization, from your church or somewhere. When I first applied to become a volunteer in prison, the chaplain told me the list of stuff I'm supposed to take. And one of them was my ordination certificate, and I wasn't ordained. So I wrote a letter back, and he said, I'm sorry, I guess I don't qualify. He wrote back, yes, you just get a letter from your church. So if you have the backing of someone that can recommend you to go into prison. Then you have to get this approved, get all the checks approved, do a volunteer orientation, and then get a badge that you can swipe to go in. When you do finally get approved, a couple things on serving as a volunteer. First of all, be prompt. If your Bible study starts at 2:30, you want to be there before. They might not be ready, but at least you are. I went for a Spanish service one time. It was supposed to be at 1 o'clock. I was there at 5 till 1. The chaplain didn't come. They called. Finally, he came out about 20 after. He said, I was here at 1 o'clock and you weren't here. I was there at 5 till. But he had canceled the service. Evidently, he had called out just before I got there. And they said, he's not here, so he canceled the service. So I had to go back home. Be prompt, be dependable. There's always legitimate reasons not to go. But if it's a burden, you'll make it happen. If you want to go hunting, you'll make it happen. If you want to go something like that. If you're scheduled, I plan my schedule around it. Okay, Tuesday evenings are out for me. I don't do church meetings. I don't do anything Tuesday evening. If there's an emergency, I'll take off. But that's pretty important. Be kind and courteous to all, including staff. There are some staff who do not like you there. Others who like you there. And they'll do anything they can to trip you up. Some of them. And then be obedient to all the do's and don'ts. And I have the listed here, the do's and don'ts from the Department of Corrections. In your Yoke Fellowship book, we have some Yoke Fellowship do's and don'ts. But these are the Pennsylvania ones. I'd just like to highlight a couple of them. Be firm, fair, and honest in dealing with inmates. They know the rules. Okay? They know them better than you do. But when you need to stick by them, because they will try to push the limit. For one thing, you're supposed to take nothing out of what's on the other one. Under the don'ts, give or receive nothing from the inmate. Nothing in, nothing out. One evening we were there for Bible study, and a guy gave me a card, Christmas card. So I stuck it in my Bible, and I said, well, I'll just show it to the chaplain before I go out and he'll approve it. Well, that's what I did. And did he get on my case? He said, if they would have seen you put that in your Bible, you would have got kicked out. Because you got something from them and were taking it. One of our volunteers took a picture in to show the inmates. The chaplain really got on them because they say people actually put their in a printed photo. There's actually two layers, and they actually put stuff in there and sneak stuff in and out through that. So nothing in, nothing out, and they know that. And so you need to stick by the rules. Be a good listener. Know when to say no to an inmate. I've had people want to make phone calls to family. Just have to say no, I can't do that. They want something, you have to refer them to the chaplain. Do be committed and persistent in your volunteering. Don'ts, I already mentioned the first one there. Don't be naive or gullible. We're a very believing people. We trust people. You have to be careful. They know how to suck you in. Many of them have done that for all their lives. Under safety, that's a question. Some people try prison ministry, and when that door locks behind them, they get scared. It has never bothered me. Some people it does. And is it safe? I've never had a problem. I could. They always tell us, remember where you are. We just had a new volunteer go in, And the chaplain was telling him all these things you're supposed to do. Stand, if you're talking to an inmate, stand here and look at the crowd. Don't put your back towards the crowd because he can see everybody else. And he went through all this list, and this poor guy, he's not going to ever want to come back. But he's planning to come back. But be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. Obey all the rules. You're not in trouble as long as you obey the rules. If you step outside of that and something happens, then it's bad. Pray for safety. And always remember where you are. Does anyone have any questions? Or something to share from your experiences going in prison?
You talked about singing groups. Is that something for like a youth group, or is that a long process that's more frustration than, you know, it's giving permission?
They told us not more than 20, and everybody has to be over 18. That's always a problem with our youth group because probably a third of them are under 18. But they still do it, and it's worth it. It's rewarding. You get the opportunity to do it. It's a six-month clearance. So what they try to do is maybe do twice in that time so they make use of their checks. Okay, anyone else? Yes?
Do you deal mostly with Pennsylvania? Do you do anything with other states?
I do not, no. Does anyone else do anything with other states?
We're in New York, our church is in. We haven't really done much with prison ministry, but there's plenty of incarcerated people. And I just feel like that's an area we need to pursue. So I see this something about just do it, you know? And I guess I could start somewhere.
Yeah.
It does vary. We were in Tennessee, our church went into a weekly jail ministry a lot. And we would often go in without being searched. We carry a cardboard box of books and tracts and calendars right in and just sit there and visit with them. So it makes a world of difference where you are. Mm-hmm.
I had revival meetings in International Falls. I don't know if anybody knows Walter Martin. It was in International Falls. And I went with him Sunday afternoon to the county jail. And he kept his cell phone in his pocket. And I'm like, get rid of that cell phone. Just walked in. Inmates come out. We had a nice Bible study. That would not happen where I go.
One of the men accidentally took the utility knife in. We just told him, well, don't do it again.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say for the most part, it's as you described. This was Tennessee.
And someone like Gospel Express and Gospel Echoes, they go into many prisons and they can take the little children in and sing. It doesn't happen in Pennsylvania. In fact, we had a Light of Hope crusade, and one of their teams went to the prison, and they were going to leave their motorhome in the parking lot and let the children and mother there while the rest went in, and they couldn't even do that. They couldn't leave it sit there. So it's different. Okay, sharing. Be honest. Be honest when you share. Be real. Don't try to put it on. That's one of the things the chaplain told me when I started. So one of my fears was they're going to ask me questions I can't give an answer to. That'll happen. It has happened. But that doesn't mean you fail. They give you a question that you don't have an answer for or can't think of an answer for it. Say, I don't know, but I'll find out. I'll study it and come back next week and I'll have an answer for it. If you try to bluff it, they know it. Okay? They know when you're real. Let the Bible speak to needs and situations. That's always a blessing to me. They come with just Tuesday evening, a man came and he shared his testimony. He used to be a gangbanger. He was outside of prison and in prison. He is in Smithfield, and the prison I go in, his 22-year-old son was murdered in 2013 on Mother's Day in New England. He didn't know anything about it. His brother came to visit him, and he noticed his brother was nervous. And he didn't know what the deal was. And finally, his brother said, you know that, he said his name was killed. And here what happened was that these guys that were killing, did the killing, were after his brother and accidentally got his son. It was mistaken identity. So his son died to save his brother. Now, how are you going to do that? He has learned to forgive. And he's working through it. Another man, Comacho, that I work with every week, he was diagnosed with AIDS. And one of the first times I met him, he said, I'm going to die in prison. He has life without parole, so he probably will. But they prayed, and the last number of years that they've tested him, they can't find any AIDS. He's completely healed. St. Patrick's Day is the worst day of the year for him. On that day, a number of years ago, on St. Patrick's Day, he killed his wife. He says, I don't even hardly remember it. He said he just knew he got very angry. And in a fit of rage, he killed her. He said, I killed the person that was dearest to me. And he's living the Christian life, but that is very hard on him over that time. Tuesday was St. Patrick's Day. Tuesday evening, we were sitting around, and a number of them were sharing their testimony. And I looked at Camacho, and I said, you have something to share. I said, I've been thinking about you today. And that just, he was just so blessed, because I had been thinking about him. He always struggles over that time. Last year, he realized that he doesn't have to carry that guilt, because he could not understand how God could forgive him. But when you see somebody work through something like that, my problems look pretty small. Many of my problems look pretty small. And so it has been a tremendous blessing sharing. Learn to love the unlovely. And I'll admit, there are some that are more difficult. There's one man, I go into SCI Benner, which is another prison. I go into there once a month for a Spanish service. And you have to just know that he's a man, because has all the traits of a woman, and he sits real close to a guy, and he's homosexual. And it takes the love of God to reach out to him. I'm serious, that's just the way it is. It is so repulsive, the way he acts in service, but I still have to learn to love him. One night, we were sitting around having Bible study, and I began to think about different, I don't know what they're all in for, but I know what a number of them are in for. And it was just like the Lord said, okay, this man was in for rape. Have you ever lusted? Yeah. He's in for murder. Have you ever hated? It was just down, yeah, I did it all. Well, it takes the same blood to cleanse me as it does them. And as I sit there and have Bible study, I don't even think about the tattoos, all that, because there's something, this relationship develops that you don't think about that. Be a volunteer that is an asset, not a liability. If you look in here, there's a list of volunteers. Let's see here if I can find it quick. Page 11. It has volunteers that are assets and volunteers that are liabilities. You don't want to be a liability. If you're going in there to set them straight and let them know that you have it together and they need to get it together, they will feel that. But if you're going in there to help them, they will sense that as well. Congregational involvement, I already mentioned, share requests, and encourage your people to get involved. In our Yoke Fellowship Prison Ministry, there are about 8 or 10 conservative churches in our area that are involved with our different state prisons and volunteer county. And I've had pastors come to me and said, the men that are helping you in prison have become better assets in our congregations because they're more involved, they have a burden, they study, they learn to share, they learn to give testimony. And I think it's a real blessing. Aftercare. These men come out of prison. Some of them, like I said, have been in 20, 30, 40 years. This man that I talked to the other night that was in 25 years, you think back 25 years from now, 1990. What changes have there been since 1990? There weren't cell phones. In fact, in 1999, whenever I was just as ready to go in, there was a man from Huntington broke out of jail, and he had been in prison for 20 years. And he came down here to Chester County somewhere to where he had been before. He stole a vehicle up at the prison. He broke out. He stole a vehicle. It was an old vehicle. He couldn't get a new vehicle running, but he could get an old vehicle. He stopped at a gas station to get gas, and he waited for them to pump it. He didn't know how to pump gas, because back when he went to prison, everything was full service. They had cell phones there, but he didn't know how to use cell phones, so he was going to pay phones. And he came down to Chester County to a place where there was farms where he used to run around, and they caught him because he went into a development, and it was closed. It was a dead end. He thought it was just it's a new development since he was in prison. So things have changed. When these men come out, they need help. They often go back because they don't know how to function. And it is a challenge to help them. In our area, we got a aftercare facility ready to go. It's called Stepping Stones to Freedom. It's been a prayer for 7 or 8 years. But we're having trouble because of sex offenders. The community doesn't want it, but we're going to plan to do it anyway. But now parole doesn't want more than one sex offender in the building at a time. And we have a house with a bunch of beds. So actually, sex offenders are the lepers of today. There's about 3,000 inmates in the Pennsylvania state system that could get out. They have maxed out, but when they step outside the prison, they have no address. And it has actually happened in Pennsylvania where they stepped outside of a state prison and were rearrested because they didn't have an address, because they're a sex offender. But they had nowhere to go. It's a challenging work, but I think it's wide open. Trying to think. What I should hit on. I'll give you this. There was an inmate got out of prison. One of the things he needed to do was go buy a toothbrush. So he went to Walmart to buy a toothbrush. And this whole section was toothbrushes. And it blew him away. He left. He couldn't handle it. All he wanted to do was buy a toothbrush. He'd been away from society. I've had men come to me, said, I'm maxing out. In a year or so, he said, I'm afraid. He said, I'm afraid to come out. He said, I feel better here. I have a church fellowship here. Outside, I don't have a church fellowship because I was never a Christian outside. So there's a great need there. Is there any other thoughts or questions? We're getting close to the end of our time. We're set up for 6 months. It's a 6-month program. They must have Bible study. I think it's every day. Must have a job. They must have a church. They must go to a church. And we never run anybody through it yet, but we've modeled it after some other ones. Help them get their driver's license. Help them get their cards. Help them get just reestablished. Try to walk with them through that. Has anyone helped people when they get out of prison to get established? Try to. It's a challenge. It's a challenge. There's one man that got out, and sometime later he was back in. And here he was on parole, and on parole you're not supposed to have any knives. And he got caught with a kitchen knife, a knife that you eat with. But it wasn't at a meal. I forget what happened. And he got put right back in. And they just need somebody to help them through that. I recommend, if your church isn't involved, that you get involved. It has been a tremendous blessing. I've seen changed lives, and I've seen disappointments. We had one man that a lady was going in with Bible study, and he went to her one day and said, God told me that you're going to get divorced from your husband and marry me when I get out. And that was, yeah. And he had been Muslim and became a Christian and was doing well, and he got off. And, okay, thank you. All right, Lord bless you. I encourage you to get involved. I think it's a real blessing. It's a tremendous opportunity.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.